So the next portion of the program, we talk about something in genetics. Don't get it nervous. We have somebody here that's going to really make it easy, and I've heard him speak many, many times. So we've heard many, many opportunities for collaboration that we've had. We've always looking for opportunities to bring more value to you. And several years ago, we discovered a program in USDA that we put together an appropriations request. And with the help of Jack Pettis, got those that request into the right hands. And the help of someone else, Dr. Ed King, our research consultant. Dr. King, would you say? Dr. King is he's been working with USDA for a long time, retired from USDA, and knows USDA programs very well. Been very instrumental in getting this program up and running. We were successful in getting $2 million appropriated from Congress. It's into the USDA's budget every year now. And to bring this genomics program to the forefront and use this new technology for your benefit to help our breeders make better decisions. And we have Dr. Keel Korak, who's been working with us on this program, and he's here to discuss and explain some of what the program is going to do and how we've set it up, and hopefully if you have any questions, he'll be able to answer some of those as well. So, Keel got his doctorate from Madison, Wisconsin, and he's been working with, he worked with carrots before. He's passionate about the genomics and bringing this this new technology to the benefit of sheep.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for inviting me to speak here today. I'm hoping
Escape. Click on your name.
Can't see. Great. Thank you. Glad that's working. It was a bit of a last-minute rush to get my presentation into the system this morning. I do want to start out by acknowledging that I was meant to be here today presenting with my research leader, Dr. Brian Scheffler. Unfortunately, he had a family emergency, so he left for Mississippi late last night to travel up north to attend to that. He sends his regrets and shared some thoughts with me before he left that I'll try to convey to you today. That being said, he's been doing this a lot longer than I have, and there are some questions that I'll have to defer to him. But I will do my best with what I have to share. So my goals for today's presentation are really pretty straightforward. By the time you go out to lunch and talk to all those people I can hear outside, I'm hoping that you can tell them who I and Dr. Scheffler and the rest of the genomics unit and the USDA are, what we're doing to support sugarcane research and breeding, how we became involved in sugarcane, and how we're using your support. So just to start, what Aaron was saying, I went to school at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where I worked on carrot breeding. And so it has been an exciting adventure learning about sugarcane. They're very, very different crops and species. But now, for the last 3 years or so, I have been working for the USDA and the Genomics and Bioinformatics Research Unit. So that unit is housed in Stoneville, Mississippi, but the scientists are spread all over the Southeast. And I'm actually in Raleigh, North Carolina. My family moved there a couple years ago, so after school it was a really nice opportunity to go back to to head south and join them. And then as far as the Genomics and Bioinformatics Research Unit, these are slides from Ryan. A lot of what we work on is producing high-quality genomes of agriculturally important species. So we work on melon, we work on rice, cotton, peanuts, spinach. We also do a lot of insect genomics with a large USDA initiative. And we're also very active developing new tools and techniques techniques for agriculture. Here are some of the different tools that have been produced by members of the unit. And we're, like I said, we're also actively developing new methods in data aggregation, machine learning, and custom software. Right now, in addition to Brian, Dr. Scheffler, the research leader, there are three amazing scientists in the unit, and soon there will be a fourth whose mission will be primarily to support sugarcane, but something that I do really want to point out is that the unit works as a collaborative and synergistic group. So each of the three scientists you hear has complementary and distinct areas of expertise, all of which I think have potential to add benefit to some of the initiatives in front of this group. So that's me, that's the unit. Who is the Sugarcane Integrated Breeding System? In many ways, it's all of you. Dr. White alluded to it earlier, but it incorporates members from three different USDA research units, as well as academic partners at University of Florida and Louisiana State, as well as many industry scientists and representatives. And we've all come together to work towards common goals. So as I was thinking about what I wanted to share with you all today, I wanted to find a way to contextualize some of the work that we're doing. And I was thinking, you know, there's actually a lot of overlap and similarities between the work that I'm going to talk about today and what is happening in the world of precision agriculture. And I thought that might be a little closer to some of y'all's wheelhouses. So precision agriculture is a broad umbrella term to describe the science of improving crop yields and assisting management decisions using high technology sensor and analysis tools. So I'm wondering, could I get a show of hand for growers or scientists or producers in the room if you could describe some aspect of the work you do as incorporating precision agriculture? Okay, so a handful. That's awesome. There are a lot of the techniques that you're using to enable that sort of precise approach to your work are ones that researchers are also using to guide predictive breeding. So the way that I've co-opted that definition of precision agriculture to apply to predictive breeding is to say it is the science of improving crop varieties and assisting breeding decisions using high technology sensor analysis tools. And I think the one addition that doesn't have a direct complement in precision agriculture is that we're also incorporating genetic information to guide those decisions. So if the Sugarcane Integrated Breeding System, which I'll probably call SIBS for the remainder of this talk, just because it's a lot easier to say, has this overarching mission and shared goal to enable predictive breeding in the USDA programs, there are a lot of different domains in which we need to be working in parallel. I'm going to talk about each of the elements of this pyramid because they all come together in order to allow us to implement some of these predictive breeding tools. So on the first tier, first level of the pyramid, we think about having data solutions, software solutions, and genomic solutions. And SIBS is working in each of these areas. In terms of data, we have been building a centralized, web-accessible breeding database, and we have curated, in some cases, decades, in some cases, a decade, of breeding data that has been uploaded to the centralized database that is accessible to a number of researchers throughout the USDA with a unique login and password. So you go to the web browser, type in the URL, and then put in your username and password, and you have access to just tremendous amounts of data. in terms of software that we're developing to support sugarcane breeding, we are developing custom applications that are incorporating data from that database we've initiated to provide daily customized crossing support tools. These are tied to real-time inventories of flowers in the crossing blocks. I'm really excited about this tool. I think there's lots of room for development. And we can really tailor these sorts of solutions to the specified and precise needs of the scientists that are members of this partnership. And then lastly, we are working on sequencing genomes. I'm going to talk about this part more in the later half of my talk, but suffice to say that having access to high quality genomic information is a necessary but not completely sufficient part of what it means to be able to do predictive breeding. We're also working together with scientists in the USDA and industry to integrate new measurement tools. So Dr. Todd will be giving a talk later today about some exciting work using NIR technology to predict sucrose content in real time. And part of the role that I'm playing in that work is figuring out how we can integrate that measurement tool into the data collection pipeline in a streamlined and efficient way. And then the second part of the second tier is genetics. So we're working to develop genetic technologies. And again, that the right side of this pyramid is comprising the later half of my talk, so I'm going to return to what we're doing here in just a moment. And then finally, we are enabling predictive breeding. And even though we need to start with a strong foundation of data, software, and genomes, we're doing some preliminary work as well to explore applications of predictive breeding in the USDA programs. So, as for why the genomics and bioinformatics breeding program is involved in sugarcane breeding, all of the scientists, but a couple in particular who are members of that unit, are true world-class experts in genetics and genomics. And so working together, we are going to be able to make great strides in developing genomic and genetic resources to assist in sugarcane breeding. So like I said before, part of what we're doing is sequencing and assembling genomes. How does that work? This is a technical and detailed process that starts in the field with sampling tissue, leaf tissue, from a sugarcane clone. As a definition, a genome is the complete set of genetic information, or DNA, that is present in a single organism. So using chemistry in the lab, we extract DNA, so that genetic component of the sugarcane cells, and then we process it using a machine that can actually read the genetic sequence and spit us out a report. This little black box looks insubstantial in the slide. It's actually quite a big machine. I think to get it into the lab, they had to knock off the door frame because it wouldn't fit through the door. And it's quite an imposing device. And with your support, we were able to purchase this, which is going to dramatically speed up and create efficiencies in the work that we're doing. So this is a cutting edge piece of technology, but what it spits out is not a complete genome. What it gives us is pieces, which I often think of as pieces of an unassembled puzzle. So that's work that happens in Stoneville, and then I get the data, and my job is to put the pieces together. And the way I think about it is that I'm putting together a puzzle. Before the purchase of this new technology, the size of the pieces that we got were very, very small. And so you can think of that as one of those like extreme level difficulty 5-10,000 piece puzzles that takes you ages and ages to put together. Now, the pieces that we get off the technology, because this is the state-of-the-art cutting-edge equipment from the PacBio company, it means that the pieces that we're putting together are much, much larger, which makes for a significantly easier puzzle or assembly process. However, this is sugar cane we're talking about, and it is polyploid. In terms of genomics, what does that mean exactly? It means that when we get the DNA from the plant, we're not getting one puzzle, we're actually getting many copies. And we have to figure out, for each puzzle piece that we're getting from the machine, which copy of the puzzle it's going to. And you can see here, I've represented this with slightly different colors. The process of figuring out which of the copies it goes to is still extremely difficult, even with those big pieces. But it's something that would not have been feasible at all without this improved technology. So, genome sequences are research gold mines. People in research get extremely excited about them just because they open up so many doors for what we can understand about the basic biology of the species that we're working with. They're also very important from a practical standpoint because they allow us to develop genetic technologies that support predictive breeding of improved varieties. So, we are also working in this orange sphere of creating genetic technologies. So now I have a bit of a question for the audience. How similar do people think that one human is to another human who is, okay, not their identical twin, just another random human in the world? Give me a percentage. 80? 99? So 80s, 90s. Yeah, it's actually, that's a bit of, they were supposed to be next to each other, but the idea is that any two random humans that you look at in the world, if you look at their complete genomes, 99% of that code is going to be identical. The implication is that 99% of what makes us work human is the same, and it's the 1% that makes us have different hair color, different eye color, those things that are controlled by genetics that make us different. Sugarcane clones work in a very similar way. Most of the genomic sequence that you are going to compare between individuals is the same. But when we're thinking about breeding for improved varieties, we're not as interested in the parts of the genome that are the same. We want to target our understanding of the regions of the genome between two individuals that control things like why one accumulates more sugar than another, or why one can tolerate freezing temperatures better than another variety. We're interested in those small differences, so that like 1% of the total genome. So if you're familiar with technologies like 23andMe or Ancestry DNA, where you take a sample of, it's usually your spit, and you send it to a company and they give you back a report that gives you predictions of your ancestral background or your ethnic background or your propensity to develop different sorts of diseases, they're measuring the small differences between individuals to make those predictions. I was kind of curious about what these cost per sample. So in this case, the sample is you, it's a human. And they're right now, unless you get like a holiday sale, they're about $100 per sample. And what you're paying for here is not really the supplies, shipping, or processing of that sample. If you give a kid, there's like one little plastic tube and a Q-tip and then you ship that, it's like really cheap to ship. What you're paying for is the analysis and the upfront, and the company recouping their investment for the upfront research and development. So I bring this into the discussion because I want to make the point that what we are working on as part of SIBS is developing this sort of DNA test for sugarcane. But a lot of that investment is being brought in up front so that when we get to the point where we're calculating per sample cost, it's going to be much, much less per sample on the order of like a factor, thinking like $5 to $10 per sample. And that's what's going to be required, and or getting that sample cost way down in order for us to really implement a dynamic and high throughput predictive breeding program. And this, again, because of sugarcane, is not going to be particularly easy, but we have a strategic and achievable plan to get this ready in about 3 years. So in about 3 years, our goal is to have a DNA test that can be implemented in the breeding programs. And then how does all of this relate to our goal of predictive breeding? I think there can be a lot of mystery and misconceptions about what predictive breeding actually is. Conceptually, I think it's something that is comprehensible to just about anyone who took Algebra 1 in high school or college. If you remember getting a question on a test or homework assignment where you were given coordinates that represent points and you needed to draw a line and calculate the slope and intercept, and you came up with an equation that looked like this one, y equals mx plus b, you were writing down an admittedly a simple predictive model. You could take new coordinates where you only had x and predict the value of y using that equation. In predictive breeding, what we're doing is using genetics as the x-axis and we use and traits on the y-axis, and we're using those to define an equation that becomes our prediction model. That way, once we have the genetic test for sugarcane, we can calculate the x-axis of this equation and use that to bend the model to predict the traits that you're interested in. And this is really valuable because if we think about how resources are allocated within a research program on a long-term scale, measuring traits in the field like yield, like sucrose accumulation, like disease resistance, is time-consuming and expensive. In contrast, once we have a low-cost genetic test, getting a genetic signature, genetic fingerprint for any one clone, is very fast and very inexpensive. So we can leverage this cheap, low-cost technology to make predictions that increase the rate that we're able to breed those new varieties. So by investing in predictive breeding with the sugarcane integrated breeding system, you're investing in a comprehensive strategy to improve sugarcane varieties for Louisiana. That is all I have. I'm really happy to take any questions or to talk to people over lunch about this work. Thank you.
The plan to be able to use this predictive breeding to be able to shorten that window of the 12 years we're looking at in a new variety down to something we'll see that new variety a few years shorter?
Yes, that is the goal.
Question, please?
So the question is one of the applications of a predictive breeding approach, or one of the impacts rather of a predictive breeding approach, to shorten the breeding pipeline, the length of the breeding pipeline? So how much time it's taking from crossing to release of a new variety. And absolutely, a lot of the time in breeding goes into evaluating or measuring those traits, and that's exactly what is so expensive and takes so long. By using genetic information, we can replace or augment some of that field evaluation in order to select our improved varieties more quickly. Yeah, Dr. King. Dr. King was asking if I could compare the human genome to the sugarcane genome, which is a great question. And the sugarcane genome is orders of magnitude more complicated than humans. We don't often think that, it might not seem intuitive, but for whatever reason, plants are often way more complicated in how they've set up their genomic information than animals, and particularly mammals are. So it is much larger. Because it's larger, it has more freedom to do funky things that challenge the technologies that we have available. So there are regions that are all identical, but we still need to figure out what goes where. There are probably things that are flipped around. Sugarcane, also because it's so big and so redundant, can throw out entire segments of its genome and be just fine. But that just adds an additional level of complexity to how we are going to need to specify our DNA tests and predictive models moving forward. Wilson.
I know this may be hard to identify here, but how long, what's the time frame before we can get to the point where we go predict?
So right now I can say we have a plan to get that DNA test within 3 years.
Right.
Just because you have a DNA test, you do not have a predictive breeding program. So in a parallel track, we are going to be thinking very strategically about the logistics that are going to be required to shift and refocus in order to bring that into the breeding pipeline. There are aspects of that are outside of my control. But I think it's reasonable to estimate that within 5 to 10 years, we could start to really be implementing genetics into this approach. Something that I always want to stress is that predictive breeding is not, and creating a predictive model is not something that you do once. So a lot of my attention to data and software infrastructure is with an eye towards how we're going to be able to iteratively improve and update the predictive models as our goals and our populations of sugarcane in the breeding pools change over time. Yes?
With other crops, we do inserting genes or genetics for crop quality or characteristic traits. Is that something that could happen in cane? And would that put us in the genetically modified cane?
So this was a question about genetic engineering. I know there are people who are working on genetic editing and genome engineering approaches in cane. Certainly, a genome assembly is a prerequisite for that sort of approach. Given the complexity of sugarcane and how challenging it has been, given that complexity, to understand where we would target those inserts, I think we are probably quite far from having a GE product. But it is certainly within the realm of what the technology could do. And then, yes, you would be dealing with the regulations and social context that is associated with any GE product.
Thank you.